This is Monitor 67 on October 14th. I'm your host, Ted Steele. Steve Allen will be our guest this half hour, and later on we'll hear from another comedian, Bob Newhart. So, with a lineup of performing talent like that,
I'm going to step to the rear with Marilyn May. It's her new number.
Will everyone here kindly step to the rear and let a winner lead the way? Here's where we separate the notes from the noise, the men from the boys, the rose from the poison ivy.
Allen's answer to young men who've asked him over the years how to become a comedian has always been, if you somehow aren't one already, you might just as well forget about the matter. Steve talked about the matter, comedy that is, with Monitor reporter Alan Jay.
This quality you have of being able to think funny, taking words and twisting them around into gags, is that an inherent quality or is it something that can be taught?
I believe it is both. This is probably true of all creative human abilities. But the part about the training, I think, is clear enough. On the other hand, not everybody raised in a, quote, funny, unquote, context turns out to be a professional comedian, so I think there must be something inborn, too. All the comedians I know, whether they're very funny or whether they're third rate, have at least one trait or factor in common, and that is a very quick mind. Even men who haven't been well-educated still think pretty quickly, if they're true comedians. I don't mean comedy actors who just read other people's lines.
Can you give me an example quickly of a prosaic line or phrase that you could, or you have, turned into something humorous?
Well, yes, there's something that Leonard Feather quotes in the book. By the book, I mean this book, Break Bigger Than a Bread Box. He recalls the time when someone on my show was reading my palm, purporting to read my future or character. And the person said, the trouble with you, Mr. Allen, is you are loyal to a fault. And I said, yes, I've got a lot of faults, and I'm loyal to every one of them. I think that's an illustration of the kind of thing you're talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly, yes. In this connection, along the sociological line, you wrote a book some years ago called The Funny Men, which I read and enjoyed, and one thing struck me, your point about Jewish comedians being predominant. Why is that?
Well, I have a few guesses. I don't know that it's possible to answer that question in any scientific sense, but I have a few thoughts that might be relevant. One is that humor seems to originate, a great deal of humor, I should say, seems to originate out of tragic background. If you look at the raw material of most comedy, you will see that it is tragedy. Jokes are about how fat people are, how skinny they are, how broke they are, how dumb they are, how late they were for work or whatever. And the Jews, secondly, have certainly had the most tragic history of any people in the civilized world, at the very least. Thirdly, the Jewish culture is one which has a very marked respect for the intellect itself and for the word. The word is very important in Jewish literature, Jewish poetry, Jewish spiritual literature, and Jewish humor. And I think the humor is just a continuation or extension of this overall respect for what is said and the way it is said, partly because of television serving as sort of a distribution point, as it were. Even the American vernacular, even people in the South and in the, you know, all parts of the country where you might not think there would be much Jewish influence, the American vernacular has now become Yiddishized, you might say. In fact, there was a very perceptive article in Esquire magazine about a year ago on this very subject. People, all sorts of people now, even maybe live in the mountains, have never personally met a Jew, say things like, listen, it wouldn't hurt yours, and little Jewish ways of saying things.
Or using universal words like shtick.
Yeah, yes. We in show business do this. We do it on television, and people hear us, and they imitate us, and that's how a lot of the Jewish expressions, Jewish kinds of jokes and references and so forth become a part of the American language.
Thank you so much, Steve Allen, for talking with us.
Thank you, Allen.
And this is Alan Jay for Monitor.
Here's another side of Steve Allen, the musician. It's Here Comes Sergeant Pepper, played by Steve and the Gentle Players. In 1 minute, Jack Jones sings on the Monitor Beacon.
Say, Mom, it's eating time again, but why bother preparing the food? Make eating time a pleasure time. Go to Wetson's Hamburger Drive-In Restaurants in Stamford, Connecticut, on Hope Street near Colonial Road. Have a stake in helping to save lives. The Red Cross collects about 140,000 pints of blood every year in the metropolitan New York, New Jersey area. It needs hundreds more volunteers to help in collections. Give a few hours of your week to interesting and rewarding tasks. Call your local Red Cross chapter and become a blood program volunteer. People who are getting up in the world begin with Big Wilson. Monday through Saturday morning, WNBC's jolly, congenial giant uses wake-up humor, low-key conversation, and up-to-the-minute traffic reports to head your day in the right direction. For the latest news and the latest music, try New York's earliest morning man, Big Wilson, mornings from 5 to 9. You'll enjoy taking the easy way up with WNBC New York, the conversation station.
At 18 minutes past the hour, we're open for business as usual with Jack Jones on Monitor.
Gonna be open for business as usual, darling. sir, the reconstruction of my heart. Management regrets the fact the place has been so torn apart. So please excuse the inconvenience if I sigh along. Gonna be open for business as usual in my heart. So you say my mind is always wandering, and you say my eyes are sometimes longing. There are things I remember before the parting of the ways, but it will all be over one of these days. And I'll be open for business as usual during the reconstruction of my heart. Management regrets the fact the place has been so torn apart. So please excuse the inconvenience if I sigh along. Gonna be open for business as usual in my heart. Were you ever hit when you weren't looking, and hang suspended there between life and death? The way she said goodbye has really knocked me off my feet, but I'll be alright, just let me catch my breath. To be, but you can close up shop, or love will never find you home. And I am gonna make it, wait and see. I'm gonna be open for business as usual during the reconstruction of my heart. The management regrets the fact the place has been so torn apart. So please excuse the inconvenience if I sigh along. Business as usual in my heart. I'm gonna be open for business as usual in my heart.
Monitor on stage now. Star performances recorded live at leading theaters and nightclubs all across the country. Here's Bob Newhart with his button-down look at history.
This is a thing on inventions and how it takes like 30, 40 years before an invention is really recognized as being a great invention. It's about Edison, and Edison is very excited about this new invention he's come up with, and he calls all these newspaper people together in this totally dark room, and on a table is a bulb with a filament inside and a cord running out of it, and there's a guy working on a generator over in the corner, and all the newspaper people pile in, and they say, what can this possibly be, and they're all kind of buzzing, and Edison walks in, and he takes the plug, and he plugs it into the generator, and this little bulb begins to glow, and glow and glow and glow, and finally it fills the entire room with light. Well, with this, the newspaper people run out. They want to file these stories right away, and Edison says, no, gentlemen, wait a minute, that isn't it. And he walks up to the bulb, and he says, hello?
Oh, sure, Bob Newhart for Monitor on Stage. And here's Jackie Trent with Your Love is Everywhere.
How else could it be? Now you belong to me. I know your love is everywhere. Your love is everywhere. There's magic in the air and sunshine in the sky.
and their problems are the main concern of Dr. Joyce Brothers. And her topic this evening is a problem not associated with women as often as with men. But it is, nevertheless, a serious one for women.
There are 700,000 of them, and their number is increasing. Mostly, they look like typical suburban housewives. But each has a problem not ordinarily associated with middle-class wives and mothers. They're alcoholics. They drink in secret and alone. Their drinking doesn't bring them joy. Often it costs them the respect of their children and the love of their husbands. Sometimes it brings divorce and disgrace. Why, then, do they drink? They drink because they can't help themselves, says Dr. Howard Wood, who's made a study of alcoholism among women. Their problem is an illness that selects its victims just as arthritis does, or asthma, or bronchial pneumonia. Some women are predisposed to the disease of alcoholism. By studying the backgrounds of female alcoholics, Dr. Wood has tried to discover who these susceptible women are. He found striking similarities in the life patterns of female alcoholics. Most had been brought up by rigid, perfectionist mothers who were emotionally distant and preferred another child in the family. Often the fathers were heavy drinkers, scorned by their wives. The future alcoholic grew up rejected and resentful and starved for love. With no experience in recognizing love, in giving or receiving it, the girl was at a disadvantage in choosing a husband. Usually she selected one as cold and domineering as her mother. In most instances, the bride's drinking didn't start until after the wedding. Her husband gave her the first drink to release her sexual inhibitions. It worked so well that she kept on drinking to release all her inhibitions. Alcohol became the crutch that enabled her to face life and endure an unsatisfactory marriage. But it also complicated her life and threatened her marriage. Not until her husband begins to complain bitterly to all his friends does the woman recognize her problem and seek professional help. Women do this more readily than alcoholic men, Dr. Wood has found. A woman is also more cooperative under treatment. She wants to get well. Unfortunately, the complaining husband is often the one who takes her out of the doctor's hands and gives her her first drink all over again. He does this because her problem is also his. Feeling inadequate himself, he needs an alcoholic wife as a constant reminder that he is superior to someone. This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
Dr. Joyce Brothers is heard Monday through Friday on NBC Radio's Emphasis. Is the $1 million sound of Herbie Alpert, the Tijuana Brass, with the big song from South America, Abanda. In the Bristol, Tennessee, and Virginia area, you hear us on WOPI. Wherever you're listening, stay with us. There's more of Monitor. I'm your host, Ted Steele.
This is Bill Ryan. For complete and comprehensive news coverage, plus sports with Kyle Rote, tune to News of the World, weeknights on NBC Radio.